You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show, Outsmart Emotional Eating. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I know firsthand what it is like to struggle. I found the cure to binge eating, and now I help people all over the world create binge-free, happy lives. And on this show, I am here for you, too. Imagine waking up and thinking about your day, not your diet. Wouldn't that be amazing? It is possible. So today, I am going to have a Q&A. Ask me anything. And I have a whole collection of questions that I've collected from people with various questions about food, weight, and body image. If you are on Instagram, on the Instagram live feed, you can absolutely drop a comment or a question there as well. And if we have time, I'll also open up the phone lines for callers. So, okay, let us get started. So this is a question from Randy in Florida. He says, could eating slowly and chewing thoroughly help keep the nocturnal binge urge at bay? So poetic. And there he is on Instagram. Could eating slowly and chewing thoroughly help keep the nocturnal binge urge at bay? I just have to say that may be one of the most poetic ways. There you are. That may be one of the most poetic ways to put nighttime in eating, nighttime binging, the nocturnal binge urge. Okay, so only if you're binging at night because you're hungry. The only reason why you don't binge at night is if you are binging out of hunger, but if you are binging out of some emotional state, if there is something that you do not want to experience at night, it does not matter how slowly or thoroughly you chew your food during the day. You will not see any difference at night because eating at night, nighttime binging is not about food. Binging is not about food. Binging is a way to cope with something. Why is nighttime binging so common? Because at night we're not so busy. During the day, we're busy, we're working, we're doing things, our minds are occupied, we're running around, we're doing lots of things. But at night, that is when we slow down, and that is when we can start to get in touch with thoughts and feelings and wishes and fears and those types of things that we don't want to have anything to do with, right? They're too upsetting, they're too scary, and so we turn to food. And often there's a displacement. You're upset at something or somebody in your life. Let me just choose something. You're upset at something or somebody in your life, but you can't get in touch with that, or maybe there's something you can do, or you feel helpless, and so that gets displaced onto eating. So then, instead of being upset at the person in your life, now you're upset at yourself for binging. So if you're binging at night, you really want to look at what is eating at you. Remember that if you are turning to food, you are turning away from something else. There are three reasons why people binge. One, deprivation, not having enough, or having certain foods be off limits. We want what we think we cannot have. That can often lead to a binge. That's why dieting leads to binging, the diet binge cycle. The second reason is people who eat to calm down their bodies as a sedative. So if you're eating as a way to just zone out, not feel much, sedate yourself, you want to look at that. But the most common reason, and the reason behind all binge eating disorder, because there's a difference between binge eating and binge eating disorder, is as a way to cope with certain feeling states, thoughts, feelings, wishes, fears, thoughts you don't want to have. Often if we're binging and you're thinking about food, you are not thinking about other things. So, Randy, I know you're here on Instagram. If there's anything you want to add to that, if you want to identify what is eating at you, what is it at night that is hard to deal with, we can talk about that. But for everyone who struggles with binging at night, and it is the most common thing in the world for people who cope with food, binging at night, it is, it's really important to recognize that food is the solution to the problem. It is not the problem. So what's the problem? That's what we want to wonder. What is this food doing for me? Ask yourself that. What am I not thinking about? Or am I turning emotional pain to physical pain? Am I lonely? Am I empty? Is this food filling a void? What's going on with me? Be very curious and not critical. So, Randy, I hope that helped. And please feel free to add anything that you would like. Pretty much everything you said, being angry at stuff and sedation. Yeah. And those things go together, right? When you're angry, anger is an emotion of vitality, right? It's an active emotion. You feel your blood coursing through your veins. You're feeling intense. You feel revved up, right? And food can then sedate you. So you can eat, get mad at yourself. Oh my God, I can't believe I ate that. Instead of angry at whoever or whatever is going on in your life. And you're going to be less physiologically angry if you have sedated yourself with food. So the answer is then to express that anger in some way that is healthy. Talk to someone, write it in a journal. Do not turn it against yourself. Do not try to stuff it down. To be able to express it, validate it, express, not only what you're feeling, but why, what does the situation mean? Something's going on in your life that's really upsetting you. What does it mean? What does it mean about the present? What does it mean about the future? And then to really comfort yourself with words, with the very strategy. You want to validate and acknowledge what's going on. Yes, I'm angry. How could I not be angry given this situation or whatever the feeling is? And then reassure yourself. I'm doing everything I can to address it. I have to come up with recognize there's a certain amount of, powerlessness. We all have to come up with, we have to come to terms with, there's a certain amount of powerlessness we have in the world. But look at where you do have power, where you are effective, where you can create change. And just reassure yourself in whatever way you can. That is the strategy to deal with those feelings. And that's how you deal with eating at night. You don't focus on the food. You focus on what's eating at you. What's weighing on you. That's the key. If you're turning to food, it's for a reason. And that reason is not about control or willpower. It isn't even about food. Okay, so thank you. Thank you, Randy, for that first question. All right, here is a question from Nikki. She's somewhere in the UK. I'm not sure. She said, can you come up with some solutions to binging at work? Because when at home, she can distract her. I can distract myself by going for a walk. But when I'm tied to my desk and I don't have a lunch break, how do I get around that? You're tied to your desk and you don't have a lunch break. Are there no employment laws there? Oh, my goodness. That sounds terrible. Okay, so I, without giving away too much of her situation, basically she doesn't like when the stepkids visit, and she said she finds herself eating up in the lead up to their visits. All right, so the problem appears to be binging at work and binging at her desk. She doesn't have a break. She can't go for a walk. But you know what? You can't walk away your thoughts about your stepkids. You can't walk away your resentment or your hurt or your whatever it is that you're feeling. So, Nikki, the solution here is to process your feelings about your stepkids and those visits. What is it you don't like about their visits? What is it that you experience? What does it mean to you that you have to tolerate these visits? How do you feel about these stepkids? And then, you know, it's easier to focus on, oh my God, I can't believe I ate that, than it is to feel bad about your stepkids, right? However, be curious, not critical, be in the judgment-free zone. That's what I tell all my patients and clients. We're in the judgment-free zone. So that means I'm not judging you, and even more importantly, you're not judging yourself. Want to stay curious about it instead of, oh, I should love my stepkids. I should be, you know, I should be able to get over it. I'm an adult. They're kids, or whatever people say to themselves. And I have no idea if Nikki is in fact saying those things to herself. That's the socially acceptable way of being, but that's not the reality. The reality is, oh, I can't stand those kids, or, oh, I can't stand how my husband just sort of drops me when they're there, or whatever it is. Like, what is your truth? And being able to face your truth, whatever it is, without judgment, without guilt and blame and shame, and really work through those feelings. If you don't like those kids, for example, there's a reason. Be curious about that. Don't then get upset with yourself or avoid that thought by focusing on food. And the same thing, what I was telling Randy, how do you deal with feelings? First, you've got to identify them. What are these feelings? What are your emotions that you feel when you think about your stepkids visiting? What does it mean that they visit? So you have to express the feelings. I feel this. I feel upset. I feel angry. I feel resentful. I feel jealous. I feel whatever it is that is going on because what is the reason? What does it mean? What does the situation mean to you? Because thoughts and ideas create feelings, which create behavior. If we just focus on behavior, we never get anywhere. You can't, like she talks about, I can take a walk at home. Yeah, well, you can't walk away your feelings. You can only process them. So it is very important to recognize, what are your thoughts? What feelings are they then creating, thoughts lead to feelings? I don't like my stepkids, for example, leads to, you know, resentment, anxiety, guilt, whatever, which may lead to behavior. Oh, I got to get away from anxiety and guilt and shame. Let me focus on food and feel anxiety, guilt, and shame over food, over what I'm eating or what I weigh or all of those things. So, Nikki, so important for you to fearlessly or even fearfully, you know, courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is feeling the fear and doing it anyway. So it's really important for you to have the courage to face what you are actually experiencing, process that, and, you know, in my book, The Binge Cure, on page 45, 46, and 47, which I should just have it open to that page, right? I have these prompts. So the prompts are, like, let's just take anger. You finish the sentences, because we can't sit through our feelings. A lot of people say, well, I just have to sit through my feelings. No, you cannot sit through your feelings. Sitting does not make feelings go away. You can't let them go. You can't ignore them. You can't drop them. You can't stuff them down, and you can't positive think them away. P.S. The only way to get rid of feelings is to express them. So express them, give them a voice. If you have my book, Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, then open your book to page 45, finish the sentences. For example, anger. I'm aggravated. I'm aggravated because of this, or I'm annoyed, or I'm irritated. I resent. And you finish each of those sentences. And I have these prompts for many feelings: anger, sadness, anxiety, guilt, shame, loneliness, helplessness. You want to be able to express those feelings in full sentences. Okay? And then use the very acronym that I just was telling Randy. Validate and acknowledge. Of course I feel this way. How could I not? It's really hard when, using Nikki's example, the stepkids come to visit. It disrupts my life. My husband's weird. I have to give up me to do whatever it is. Of course it's upsetting. Of course I feel this way. How could I not? And then reassure yourself. You know, this is natural to feel. Anyone in my position would feel this way. Let me figure out a way to deal with their visits in a different way, but I'm going to normalize that I'm not happy about it. It's okay. And whatever encouragement that you could give to yourself without dismissing your feelings. And then the why stands for yourself. So validate, acknowledge, reassure yourself. That is the strategy. You express it, you identify it, you express the feelings, and then you vary your response. And that is how you get rid of feelings, right? Instead of, you can't walk them away, you can't step them down, you can't positive think them away, all of those things, you can only get them out by expressing them. All right, more questions. And again, if you are on the Instagram live feed, feel free to comment, question, anything in the comment box. Why do I always eat when I'm feeling upset or stressed? Well, as I've been saying, if you're eating when you're not hungry, or you're eating, emotionally eating, you're upset and you're stressed, and you're stress eating or emotional eating, it is for a reason. It is a coping mechanism. It does not mean that you lack willpower. It does not mean that you are a food addict. It does not mean any of the things that people often think it means. It means this is your learned response to stress. And by the way, why is this? Because in our society, we're kind of not allowed to be stressed. We're supposed to just be okay all of the time. The message is, be happy, or there's something wrong. We're not supposed to have feelings. You know, if we're mad, we're an angry person. Oh, you're an angry person. You're angry. You need anger management classes. If we're sad, we're told we're depressed. You know, oh, you need an antidepressant. If you're anxious, there is a pill for that too. If you're afraid, you should just not give in to fear. You should be strong. This is the message that we get in our society. And of course, some people do benefit from medication. That is not at all what I'm saying. I am talking about the prohibitions against our natural, normal human emotions. Our emotions connect us to ourselves and to each other. And when we disavow our feelings or only allow ourselves to be happy, that's a problem. We have to learn how to express our feelings, feel our feelings, allow ourselves to be angry. And by the way, being angry doesn't mean taking an action. Recently, someone said, well, I can't be angry. I don't want to yell at anyone. I don't want to yell at anyone. In the past, people have said, I don't want to throw things. So they took the feeling of anger and mixed it up with the expression of anger. Feeling anger is just, oh, this pisses me off, or I'm enraged, or I'm frustrated, or I'm irritated, or I'm ugh, whatever. That's just the feeling of anger. The expression of anger for some people, and it's not good, is yelling and screaming, is throwing things, is whatever. That's different. That's just the behavior. There are other ways to express anger. One of them is page 45 of my book. Yes. One of them is to just express it in words. Talk to a friend. Write it down. And by the way, I'm talking about anger a lot today, but that's because, you know, someone was just telling me it's not ladylike. It's not ladylike to be angry. Yeah, no. What's ladylike? First of all, it's human. We're all human. You know, men are not allowed to be vulnerable. God forbid a man should be sad and shed a tear. And women are not allowed to be angry in our society. Let's change all that, because guess what? Women get pissed. We get angry. And not just at ourselves, for the number on the scale. So what I was saying is a lot of people will confuse the thought, the identification of anger, with the expression of it. Don't do that. The identification of anger is, oh, I realize I'm really quite upset. Or sadness. Like, oh, I realize I'm very sad. Or, you know, I feel very guilty. These are just thoughts. That's a cognitive experience. You want to turn it into an emotional experience to be able to work through it. So it's one thing to say, I am very angry. And it's another thing to say, oh, I'm so pissed, right? One is you feel your feelings, you get it out. One is just a thought that it's just identifying it, doesn't do anything. Sadness, you know, some people will say, I'm very sad. Some people will say, oh my God, I'm so sad. Doesn't mean that they're crying necessarily, although that is a way of, you know, expressing sadness, but just to feel it, like feel it in your body. Emotions are called feelings because we feel them in our bodies or whatever it is. So you want to just be sure that you're not identifying your feeling alone. You are also feeling it, expressing it, and feeling it in your body, right? Not as a cognitive thought. And remember, so the question was, why do I always eat when I'm upset or stressed? Food is a protection against uncomfortable feelings. And it is a frenemy, I like to say. It is a friend. It does something for you. It helps you cope. It protects you from other thoughts and feelings you don't want to have. It distracts you. It soothes you. It does something for you. Otherwise, you wouldn't be eating. But it also hurts you. It hurts your body. It hurts your sense of self-esteem. And it doesn't really help with the situation. So remember that if you are turning to food, if you're upset or stressed, you need to find a different way of processing that upsetness and processing that stress. You may not be able to change the situation that is causing the stress, but you can change the way you feel about the situation by processing it. And processing it means going through that process that I just explained, the identify your feelings, express them in full sentences, including what does the situation mean to you, and then use the VERY acronym to respond to yourself and comfort yourself with words. Because when we use comfort words, we don't need comfort food. Okay, next question. How can I stop myself from eating when I'm not actually hungry? Okay, well, you want to focus on what's eating at you. If you are eating something and you're not actually hungry, why are you eating it? What problem is that resolving? Are you distracting yourself? I know someone who, whenever she was working and on a particularly difficult piece of work, and she would start to get upset or anxious and worried about the outcome of the work, she would just go to the kitchen. And she thought it was about the kitchen, whatever was in the kitchen, and her, you know, her roommate's secret stash of candy. She thought it was about that. No, it wasn't about that. It was about how when she was facing something difficult at work, it was triggering for her. She would start to worry. Am I going to be able to do this? Am I going to be able to figure this out? Am I going to be able to, like, all these what ifs? Am I up to the task? Am I smart enough? Am I good enough to do this? Am I an imposter? They've given me this work. They think I can do this. I have no idea what to do. Oh, what's in the kitchen? So the problem was not the secret stash of candy that kept pulling her into the kitchen like the Millennial Falcon into the Death Star. The Force had her. No, it was her thoughts whenever she struggled with something that she was working on. Because in her mind, somehow she should know everything. She shouldn't struggle. She should just be able to do it without, you know, without struggling, without thinking, without looking things up, without calling people. And so when she changed her relationship to facing difficult things at work, she stopped going to find that secret stash. So again, if you're not hungry, but you're turning to food, what are you hungry for? What are you trying to avoid? You're either trying to avoid something or you want something you can't have. And we can't have more of what we want at times. We can't have more money just because we want it. We can't have more friends just because we want it in that moment. We can't have more world peace. We can't have more sense of safety. We can't have more sense of hope. We can't have more kids. We can't have more, whatever it is. But we can always have more food. So what? Ask yourself questions. What's the more that I want? And what am I trying to get away from? What am I feeling? What's going on with me? And the more that you ask yourself these questions, the more likely you are to find answers. When we beat ourselves up for what we're eating, we just feel terrible. And then, of course, it's a terrible cycle because you feel terrible and you just go and eat for comfort. Rinse and repeat. Then you feel terrible again. And if you can't comfort yourself, soothe yourself, support yourself, validate yourself, I mean, you're only beating yourself up. You're gonna eat to escape your own mean voice. So be nice, be curious, talk to yourself as you would a friend. That's an important one. You know, if a friend was upset or stressed. So this person asked, why do I always eat when I'm feeling upset or stressed? Ask yourself this. If a friend was upset or stressed, what would you do? Would you say, oh, you're upset, you're stressed? Look, I know just what to do. I've got this. Let's eat cookies. Or would you say to your friend who was upset or stressed, what's going on? How can I help? What are you feeling? Talk to me. You would talk to your friend. You'd be curious. You'd be compassionate. You'd be open. You wouldn't just feed your friend because they're upset or stressed. So respond to yourself as you would a friend. If you're upset, if you're stressed, think about what you'd say to a friend. Say that to yourself. All right. Next question. Why do I feel guilty or ashamed after binging? All right. Most people who binge feel guilty or ashamed. But let's just take a moment and look at the difference between guilt and shame. Guilt is, oh, I did something I shouldn't have done. Or it's, oh, I didn't do something I wanted to do. So, for example, I feel so guilty that I ate all the pizza, or I feel guilty that I didn't go to the gym. So guilt is about behavior, and guilt is about the thing you did or didn't do. I feel guilty about, not doing this or doing that. Shame, on the other hand, is about yourself. So whereas guilt is, oh, I feel so guilty for eating that pizza, shame is, I feel bad about myself for eating that pizza. Guilt is, I feel guilty because I didn't go to the gym. Shame is, there's something wrong with me that I can't get myself to the gym. What's my problem? Right? Shame is attacking yourself. It's a sense that there is something wrong with you. Guilt is a sense that there's something wrong with what you did or that you didn't do something you wanted to do or should have done. So if you are feeling guilty or ashamed, then you want to look at this from the lens of displacement. Displacement is when you are displacing your guilt from one thing to another thing. Again, I kind of talked about this earlier. If you feel guilty because something's going on in your life or that happened and made you feel guilty, but you don't really want to look at that because, let's go back to the example of Nikki and the stepkids. She, let's say she feels guilty because she doesn't like it when these stepkids come. She really doesn't like it when they come, and she wishes they would never come. She feels guilty for having that thought and that wish. But instead of feeling, and by the way, I'm saying it like it's true. I'm imagining that, let's say she did feel guilty. Nikki, I don't want to put words in your mouth. But let's just say a person whose stepkids were coming and she didn't like it felt guilty for having that. She wished that she could just be like, oh, they're like my own kids. I love them so much. But she doesn't like them at all. And she feels guilty because she doesn't like the kids and she doesn't want them to visit. Oh, the guilt. It's terrible. It's too much to deal with. It's too much to bear. So then she goes and eats something. And now what has she done? She is feeling guilty about what she has eaten. Now it's, instead of, I feel so guilty because I really don't love my stepkids, it's, I feel so guilty because I ate something I shouldn't have. That's displacement. So look at, if you're feeling guilty about what you ate, think about, what else might you feel guilty for if it wasn't about food? What in your life makes you feel guilty? What thoughts, what actions? What's going on? And often it's just thoughts. Feel guilty for thoughts. And remember, thoughts are not actions, right? You could just want to punch someone in the face, but that doesn't mean you committed battery. If you actually punch someone in the face, that would be an offense for which you could be arrested. Wanting to punch someone in the face is not something for which you can be arrested. It's just a thought. Often we feel guilty for our thoughts as if they were actions. We all have thoughts. We all have all kinds of thoughts. Weird, random thoughts or not so nice thoughts or whatever. They're just thoughts. So if you feel guilty for your thoughts, do not be the thought police to yourself. Give yourself permission to feel or think as you are feeling or thinking. That is different from a behavior. That is different from an action. And that way you can process the original root issue rather than displacing it onto food. If you feel guilty about what you ate, what you're eating, what you weigh, all of those things, ask yourself, what would you be feeling guilty about if it could not be any of those things? What in your life, what thoughts, what feelings, what wishes, what desires, what makes you feel guilty? Or what would you allow yourself to feel guilty about? All right, then the second part of the question is about shame. Feeling ashamed, which is shame. So again, shame is a sense that there is something wrong with you. There is something wrong with your basic essential self. It's a mortifying feeling. So to challenge shame, let's imagine an inner courtroom. An inner courtroom has what? A real courtroom has a judge, not always a jury, but sometimes a jury, a prosecutor, and a defense attorney. So often in our internal courtroom, we are on trial, but we are only on trial with a judge and a prosecutor. We judge ourselves. We prosecute ourselves. We're harsh with ourselves. We tell ourselves all the bad things we've done, all the bad things about ourselves, and somehow there's no defense attorney. There's no other argument that says, wait a minute. Hold on a second. Objection. So create an inner courtroom where there is a defense attorney. You know, if you are telling yourself, something bad about you. You shouldn't have this, or you should do that, or whatever it is you did or didn't do, and you're feeling bad or shamed about that. Think about what that defense attorney would say to you. Speak up and give yourself an alternate view. Wait a minute. This is not actually a crime. You know? Yes, I ate the pizza, but that doesn't mean something is wrong with me. That just means I was coping with pizza and I'm really looking at that. What is that pizza about? Pizza fills a void. Maybe I'm lonely. Maybe I am There's an emptiness in my life. There's a void in my soul. Maybe I'm eating to symbolically fill a void. How about that? See, when you get curious and you challenge the inner prosecutor, you will prevail. And practice makes progress. All right. So that's part of how to deal with guilt and shame. Next question. How do I know if I'm actually hungry or just eating out of habit? All right. So there are two questions in that question. How do I know if I'm actually hungry? This is a good time to talk about the difference between physical hunger and emotional hunger. So physical hunger is physical. You feel it in your body. And it shows up as something that, like, a growling stomach, or you get lightheaded, or you start feeling, you know, hangry, or, you know, you feel in your body some kind of physiological manifestation of hunger. Personally, I get lightheaded. I start losing my words. Just can't. My recall just goes whoop. Can't finish the sentence, which is very unusual for me. So I know when I can't find my words and I feel kind of, I'm physically hungry. Plus, sometimes my stomach growls so loudly. Oh, when I had an office, it would sometimes happen with my patients, which was given the fact that we were talking about food, you know, not food, but feelings and food and all of that. It was sometimes somewhat embarrassing. I'll just share that. Now I'm online, so they can't hear it. So physical hunger is physical, and it is located in your body. And when you're physically hungry, you're not that super picky about what you're eating. It's like, ugh, I'm starving. I don't really love oranges, but that's all that's there, so I'm going to have the orange, right? You just want to eat something so you're not hungry, but you're not going to be super picky about it. Emotional hunger is located in your mind, not your body. So emotional hunger sounds like, ooh, that looks good, or ooh, that sounds good, or I really want that. And emotional hunger is when you, by eating something, you're going to change the way you emotionally feel. Oh, I'm going to eat that ice cream and I'm going to feel better. Or I'm going to eat that, I'm going to feel differently, or I'm going to calm down if I eat that, or I'm going to reward myself, right? That's emotional hunger. So physical hunger located in your body, you're not that picky about what you're going to eat. Emotional hunger is very specifically about food and thinking that whatever food that you choose, it's going to change your emotional state. You're going to feel better. You're going to feel differently. You're going to zone out. Whatever it is, it's going to have an effect on your emotions. The second part of the question, how do I know if I'm actually hungry or just eating out of habit, is, okay, a habitual response to what? You know, are you eating out of habit because it's 12:30 and you always eat lunch at 12:30? Okay, fine. You're eating out of habit. You habitually eat lunch at 12:30. That's benign. But if it's a habitual response to stress or emotional pain or anger or some feeling or guilt or shame or what have you, if it's a habitual response to that, then you want to look at what is the state that you're in that you're trying to change through food. And directly address that. Okay. So I have about 11 more minutes of the show. If anyone has a question on Instagram, please drop it in the comments. I am happy to answer whatever question you have. Bye, Randy. See you next week. He's saying goodbye. So bye-bye. If not, I will just go on. Okay. Why do certain foods make me feel better emotionally? Well, let me just start by answering the question of why food. I once had someone who said to me, and she was serious, perfectly, absolutely serious. She said she thought she was a food addict. And she said, why can't I be addicted to meth? At least I be skinny. And she was serious, absolutely serious. What I told her is that why food? Because our first experience of love and connection and relationship is our first experience of being fed as infants. We're held in someone's arms, right? We're super cozy. We're wrapped in blankets. We're held in arms that make us feel safe. There's usually a smiling face looking at down at us like, oh, how cute. And we look up and we see ourselves reflected in the smiling face and we feel blissful and safe and all is well with the world. And it's just absolute pure bliss. And that experience is fused with the experience of being fed because that's also what's happening. So in our psyche, we don't consciously think of it this way, but in our psyche, food equals relationship. Food equals relationship. But when people are unpredictable and unreliable and unavailable, food is none of those things. Food is predictable. It is reliable. It is available. And if it sounds funny to you that I would say food equals relationship in our psyches, consider the language that we have. We talk about, you know, comfort food, but comfort food is really the wish to be comforted by somebody. We talk about being hungry for love, conflating love and hunger. We talk about being starving for attention, right? So many ways our language points to this connection between food and relationship. So if you associate certain foods with certain experiences, that makes sense. Right? You feel better emotionally because you associate those foods with some sense of peacefulness, soothing, what have you. I know someone who always craved like rice pudding, not because it was smooth and creamy, but because her grandmother used to make her rice pudding. And she loved her grandmother and she felt so safe with her grandmother. And it just, the rice pudding evoked the feeling of being with her grandmother, which was so, she felt so loved and so cherished and so safe and, you know, the center of the universe kind of feeling, which she did not feel with other people, like in her family. So look at what those certain foods are that make you feel better emotionally. What are your associations to that those foods? What is it about those particular foods that are your go-to? What memories do you have of them? What associations do you have of them? I wrote an article for Psyche online about how to stop emotional eating. And I talked about this one patient who always had to have donuts, right? Her thing was donuts. And it was interesting because she would talk about her mom as if there was always something missing in their relationship. Something was missing in their relationship. Why did she crave donuts? Guess what? There's a donut hole. Something is missing in the donut. So the donut kind of psychologically, like symbolically symbolized her relationship with her mom, where there was something missing. And later on, at some point, she went from donuts, wanting donuts, to wanting like the whatever those donuts are, they're not donuts, but there's some kind of donut-like thing where they're filled with something in the middle. And she got them from the bakery and they were empty. The filling was missing. And she was just like, I want my filling. And she had her hands over her breasts like that. You know, those, the, it symbolized like mother's milk or something. It symbolized what she wasn't getting. So that's some deep psychological, psychoanalytic stuff. But the point is, if there is something that you are drawn to, there's a reason. Maybe you never got it as a kid, or maybe you got it and you associate it with certain experiences and certain feeling states. Also, keep in mind that for babies, we're often babies when they cry. You know, ideally, a baby cries and the parents go like, "What's wrong? What do you need? Do you need a nap? Do you need some food? Are you hungry? Do you need your diaper changed? Do you need a hug?" Right? Ideally. And some parents do that. Some parents are so busy or so frazzled or so overwhelmed that the baby cries and boop, they put a bottle or a boob in their mouth. So what does the baby learn? Any kind of distress, whether you're hungry or you need a hug or you need to go to the bathroom or you need whatever, anything distressful can be met. I'm just kidding about the bathroom part, but anything that's upsetting or distressing gets resolved with food. And then the baby grows up to just think that food is the solution to everything. Tired, get something to eat. Lonely, get something to eat. Right? It's whatever is going on. Angry, get something to eat. So really looking at, like, what is it that you are, what is it that you are feeding? What is it that you're trying to resolve? And learning new ways of self-soothing. And one of the ways of self-soothing is to talk to yourself the way you would talk to a friend, using the VERY acronym. That is the way to comfort yourself. Validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. All right, one quick last question. How can I learn to listen to my body's hunger and fullness signals? Think about a scale of 1 to 5. So hunger scale, 1 is you're barely hungry. In fact, you're almost not hungry at all. 5 is you're ravenous. You would eat anything in front of you. So start gauging. Where am I on the hunger scale? Am I ravenous? Am I slightly hungry? Is it somewhere in the middle? You don't want to get too hungry because getting too hungry can trigger a binge, not from emotional reasons, but for deprivation. If you're starving and you're ravenously hungry, then it takes a while before you even register that you're full, so you can end up overeating or even binging, eating too much. So use that hunger scale to gauge that. Same with a fullness scale. 1 is, I'm still kind of hungry. 5 is, I'm about to burst and I've got to unbutton my jeans. So you want to be like 2, 3. And just start asking yourself, how hungry am I? How full am I? And the more that you do it, the easier it will get for you to gauge and recognize that. But keep in mind that binge eating, when it is about, resolving something emotional, has nothing to do with physical hunger or fullness. That is why people are in the 5 on the fullness and they're still eating. They can't stop. It has nothing to do with being full. Also, slow down when you eat. Sometimes when we eat too fast, it takes us a while to recognize when we're full. And that's the physiological part of it. From a psychological perspective, ask yourself, if you're hungry, maybe you want to look at, what are you hungry for? Sometimes the state of yearning, the state of wanting more of something, more love, more connection, more money, more whatever, can be felt as physical hunger. So what are you hungry for? What do you want more of in your life? What are you missing? Really look at that and consider You know, those kinds of hungry. What about your hungry heart? Consider that. And that is our show for today. I cannot believe how fast that went. Wow. So thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Dr. Nina Sabel Rocklin, psychoanalyst, here to help you create a binge-free, happy life. I am here on LA Talk Radio every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, or you can listen later wherever you get podcasts. And for a deeper dive into the topics I discussed today, check out my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. It is available on Amazon in every format, including Audible, when I read it to you. Have a great week. I'll see you next week. Stay curious. Bye.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Sabel Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.